Chapter 35. Uncle David started working with the FBI in January. They told him about the hallucinogenic mushrooms in the meth that was showing up in different hockey towns and Indian reservations. Maybe that's when David realized that Lightbulb's research question about poisonous plants was actually about fungi. Spring had come early, and Uncle David could forage for mushrooms. He wrote an entry reminding himself to research growing seasons and made a plan to return each month. There might be new growths once it becomes warmer and the days were longer. Rain was another variable. A heavy rainfall might produce something that had not been around a month earlier. He began with land owned by Travis's family on Sugar Island. His entries became a log of his exploration of Duck Island. He foraged for mushrooms in cross sections, just like I did, except he started at the north end and worked his way south. He used orange biodegradable seedling pots to mark his boundaries instead of yarn. I smile. His lessons are part of me. I really am the best person to pick up the investigation where Uncle David left off. He documented each specimen of mushroom or fungi he came across in the unusually early spring. He left room in the margin to list its scientific name once he had identified it using his guidebooks. There were no blank margins. Every specimen had a name in the margin, with one exception. On April 4th, 2004, Uncle David found a variety of parasitic mushroom that wasn't listed in any guidebook or online directory. He drew a picture of the culprit. It looks similar to Astrophora parasitica. His notes indicated it grew on a documented variety of mushroom that was hallucinogenic. The parasitic mushroom was nourished by a decaying, or composting, hallucinogenic host and was likely hallucinogenic as well. An anglerfish of a mushroom. He added a row of alternating question marks and exclamation points, which was his signature indication of being excited about this unknown specimen. My own heart quickens at the possibility of discovering Uncle David's discovery. This could be a previously unknown hallucinogenic mushroom that might have been added to a batch of crystal meth, which found its way into the hands of a group of 13 kids on a reservation in northern Minnesota. I turn the page. My heart sinks as I read the results of Uncle David's analysis of the anglerfish mushroom. It did not share the same hallucinogenic qualities as its hallucinogenic host. He wrote, "There is no connection between champignon and cativa medicina." He had given an Italian translation for meth, calling it bad medicine. I think about what he just told me. The mushrooms are a dead end. Uncle David knew and withheld the information from the FBI, and he wanted me, and only me, to know both of these details. Uncle's last entry was April 9th, 2004, on Good Friday. He wanted to talk to Lightbulb's mother. He hid the notebook in the false bottom of his desk. My mother reported him missing 2 days later when he didn't show up for Easter Sunday dinner. I cry again. This time it feels as if my sorrow has settled in my lungs. Heavy, raspy, shallow breaths. I'm so sorry for pushing my grief away to make space for anger. I wish I could remember my last conversation with Uncle David beyond saying hello and helping myself to snacks from the desk drawer. If you knew it was the last time you were going to see someone, would you say something profound? Would you share how much they meant to you? Would you ask any burning questions? Would you ask for forgiveness? Would you thank them? The library is dark when I push away from the desk and go to the formal dining room. I sit in my usual seat and remember that last Easter Sunday dinner. Grand Mary at the head of the table, my mother next to me, Uncle David's seat empty. I blink away my tears until I hear him come into the house, apologizing to Grand Mary before he even sits down. Traffic was backed up on the International Bridge all the way into Canada. It's never taken over 2 hours to cross back into the U.S. He winks at me. Uncle David, I say across the table, thank you for leaving the clues for me to find. and for giving me the skills to decipher them. I'm so grateful for you. I drive to Jamie and Ron's rental house. Jamie answers the door. Ron grades papers at the kitchen table. Jag is on TV. Do yous want to go for a walk? I say. They do. We walk a few blocks away to Project Playground, by the ball fields. It's one of those gigantic wooden structures like the one Art built for the twins. This one was built by community volunteers, with the tribe providing most of the materials. I need more information before deciding what to do with the notebook. Well, I finished my mushroom research project on Duck Island. My words in the cold night are visible puffs that dissipate after a few seconds, as if truly cloaked in secrecy. Their faces light up. I didn't find anything, I say quickly. But I was wondering when the FBI started working with Uncle David. Like, what month? I already know, but I need them to do most of the talking. January, Ron says. The kids in Minnesota got sick the last week in February. Is the timing important? It could be. There are so many different varieties and growing seasons. It was a mild winter. Maybe it grew only then, during a fluke early spring. Unless we can replicate the conditions from February, we aren't collecting from the same sample Travis had. Ron's frustrated sigh lingers in the air. Okay, what other information can I mine from them? It might help if I knew more about what was in the file about the kids. Which community? And how are the kids doing now? Ron won't name the reservation and doesn't know how they're doing. I keep my face a smooth mask to hide my anger at being stonewalled. Jamie told me they hallucinated men coming after them in the woods. Did they mention any other detail about the hallucination? Was it visual only, or did it involve other senses too? And maybe cross the senses? Doesn't that happen sometimes? I forget what it's called, but it's where people see music or taste colors. Talk less and listen more, I scold myself. Ron shrugs. It didn't make any sense. The kids were scared 1 minute and pleading for more meth a minute later. They told the ER staff that men came after them. Most of the kids wouldn't say anything else, especially after their parents arrived. Maybe that stuff happened, what you said about jumbled senses, because their vision was distorted. One boy mentioned that the men chasing them were small men. Little people. The little people found the kids in the woods and scolded them. The FBI assumed whatever had been added to the meth X was a hallucinogenic mushroom because the Anishinaabe kids who tried that particular batch of meth saw something that didn't make sense. The team working the investigation was alarmed by the group aspect of the hallucination and thought it was an unusual side effect of an unknown variety of mushroom. Whatever was added to the batch of meth X, it didn't cause hallucinations. Because the little people are real. Travis said the little people were mad at him. But what if they were warning Travis, like they had with Leonard Manitou's cousin Skinny? What was so bad that the little people went after the kids in the woods to warn them? If the meth X additive wasn't a hallucinogenic mushroom, then what was it? I've got to go somewhere to think about what I still need to figure out. There are connections that I'm on the verge of making, but I need to go through the information again, uninterrupted and undistracted. Step 1. Don't show any reaction that might tip them off that you're on the verge of a eureka moment. Step 2. Think of an excuse to make an exit. Step 3. Go home and think. I sigh the way Ron did earlier. Well, what should I work on next? Because I'm all out of ideas. Ron starts to say something, but I keep talking. I know. Fruit of the poisonous tree. You're not supposed to direct me. I smile at Jamie leaning against the tube slide. He's letting Ron do the talking so far. But couldn't you be sneaky and drop a clue like, whatever you do, Donis, don't buy drugs from the boosters. I turned sharply to Ron. Wait, you did. Ron, in the car on the way to Marquette, you said, we can't tell you to search the hockey team's gear bags for disposable cell phones. I shake my head and give Ron a begrudging smile. I see what you did there. You're a clever one. We head back to their house. Ron says goodnight and goes inside. Jamie leads me behind the Jeep. I put my arms around him, already hungry for his kisses. Instead, Jamie places one gentle kiss on my forehead, like my mother does. I pull back, puzzled. He leans in to kiss my cheek, except he doesn't. I see what you did there. You're the clever one, Jamie whispers in my ear. I drive away, mind racing. What did he mean? What does Jamie suspect I've done? Turning onto my street, I notice Auntie's vehicle in the driveway. Shit, I forgot I promised to come over tonight. It's 10 o'clock and I said I'd come over at 8. I park next to her. Before my hand touches the key in the ignition, she's already slamming her door and stomping around the front of the Jeep. Auntie, I begin, intending to explain my exhaustion. My sentence halts in my throat. My aunt has the same do not fuck with me look from the blanket party night. The only choice you got is whether your ass rides shotgun with me or in your own ride to the island, she says. But make no mistake, Donna's firekeeper, you are coming with me.